Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. President-elect Donald Trump has promised to immediately deport as many as 3 million immigrants with criminal records. And in an interview on 60 Minutes on Sunday, he reiterated his pledge to build a wall between the U.S. and Mexico. His stand on immigration is what set him apart in the Republican primary and what, in part, has energized many far-right voters. So there's a lot at stake in what he achieves on this score. Coming up, we'll hear from two sides of the immigration issue. Joining us now by phone is New York Times national immigration correspondent Julia Preston. Welcome to the show, Julia.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
In his 60 Minutes interview on Sunday, Donald Trump appeared to be softening on some of the details. He's now talking about immediate deportation of just 3 million people, those here illegally who also have criminal records. And he said that portions of the wall may be just what we think of as fencing. So what do you make of that? Softening around the edges, testing the waters to see what he can get away with not doing?
Well, I think it's an interesting indication of where Donald Trump took the immigration debate during the campaign that we are describing a plan to deport 3 million people in the first year as a softening of his position. I can assure you that many immigrants out in the country do not regard that as a significant change. What he did do was make a pretty sharp distinction, and he had already done that in a speech that he made in Arizona about immigration during the campaign. He made a pretty sharp distinction between the general population of undocumented people, and he referred to them as, he said, some are terrific people, and the population of immigrant criminals. I think the area for dispute here is whether there are really 2 or 3 million immigrants in the country who have the type of serious criminal record that would expose them to immediate deportation.
Because, I mean, this is what he says he'll do. He has the power to do this. It's just he has to follow some rules.
He definitely has the power to do it. The president has extraordinary broad discretion on immigration matters. And this is basically an enforcement policy question, and so he can begin immediately to issue guidelines to Immigration and Customs Enforcement to be much more aggressive in terms of going after people who not only have the kind of gang affiliations that he has called for, but also people that have lesser crimes, nonviolent crimes, you know, store shoplifting, that kind of thing. And those are the folks that President Obama has generally not focused on.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're sussing out what we can of the immigration policies of President-elect Donald Trump. My guest is Julia Preston. She's national immigration correspondent for the New York Times. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We will have two other voices coming on later in the hour for and against, I guess, the Trump proposals. Julia, how do you contrast Trump's immigration policy proposals with the Republican Party and the previous goals of the GOP-led Congress, and how's that going to work?
Well, I think Trump has just heightened the focus on the negative aspects of immigration. I think he has a much more skeptical view of immigration. Even to this day, Paul Ryan, who I think we believe will be elected Speaker of the House, has had has supported, for example, a path to citizenship for most of the undocumented workers, and there has been some part of the Republican Party that has been, I would say, practical on immigration issues to the extent that there, you know, we need farm labor. There are broad sectors of our industries where immigrant labor has been very important, and so the Republicans recognize that. But there also has been an important part of the Republican Party that's skeptical of what it calls amnesty and and does not want to give any kind of benefits to people who they regard as lawbreakers, and Trump is definitely the champion of those people.
And just a little detail, I read it different ways at different times, but is he talking about any immigrants with criminal records or illegal undocumented immigrants with criminal records?
Well, I think to get to 3 million people, you would have to include, if you're a legal permanent resident, anyone who is not a citizen is okay. vulnerable to deportation. And if you're a legal permanent resident and you commit a certain kind of offense, you can be subject to deportation. These are very hard cases, however, to move quickly. And, a lot of cases, these people have been in the United States for many years. They have families. The immigration system is very unforgiving. If you commit a certain kind of crime, you can be, deported. And whether you have family or whether you've been rehabilitated, all of those things don't count. But they do take a long time to carry out those types of cases. And so he's not just talking about undocumented people. To reach that kind of number, you would have to include lots of legal residents as well.
And how does that contrast with the policy of the Obama administration?
Well, the Obama administration has also focused on deporting criminals, mm-hmm. and that has been its policy, and particularly in the last couple of years, very sharp focus on picking up people who have serious crimes, felonies, gang members, that kind of thing. There is an element of continuity here. I think what Donald Trump is talking about is an entirely different order of magnitude in terms of the intensity and the scope. He would be looking at a much wider range of people be looking at for deportation or incarceration.
In one of your articles, you quote Kevin Appleby. He's the senior director of international migration policy at the Center for Migration Studies of New York. And he said that, quote, Trump would have to conduct a sweep or raids or tactics such as those to reach the numbers he wants to reach. It would create a police state in which they would have to be aggressively looking for people. Does that wash with what you know about what the logistics would be of such an effort?
Well, I wouldn't, I'll leave it to Kevin to characterize whether that would be a police state or not.
Mm-hmm.
You definitely would have to have an expansion of the existing enforcement agents at Immigration and Customs Enforcement. You definitely, I think, would have to go beyond what the administration has been doing in terms of targeted searches out in the communities to find people. The other thing that Mr. Trump will definitely have to do is reinstate programs that engage the local police in enforcement. And I think, as I believe, particularly in southern Ohio, there's been a lot of controversy about that kind of program. And you have some police chiefs that think it's a very good idea, and you have some police chiefs who think that this is a problem for local enforcement and for engaging communities in crime solving. And so that I'm confident that President-elect Trump's policies will reawaken quite a serious debate and some conflict over that.
Does this follow along the lines of the issues of sanctuary cities and whether he can order those cities to enforce his deportation policies?
Yes. In other words, some of these cities explicitly call themselves sanctuary cities, Chicago, San Francisco. There are a few. There are many other cities, hundreds actually, across the country and counties that simply, in part because of federal rulings that happened under the Obama administration, they are just reluctant to enforce any kind of hold or detainer that the federal authorities request. And so there's a kind of a legal gray area as well. In many cases, the word sanctuary isn't quite right. What we're just talking about is a kind of hesitation by local police to turn people over, to be publicly willing and, routinely willing to turn immigrants over to the federal authorities for deportation. There's a feeling that that can have a negative impact on the local police's ability to gain trust in communities and be able to enforce the law.
Also, he has talked about, he's promised to hire an additional 5,000 Border Patrol agents and triple the Immigration and Customs Enforcement staff of deportation officers. And I was wondering if anyone's crunched the numbers on the cost of achieving that goal.
I have not. I'm not aware of the, I mean, I can't recite the figure off the top of your head. I think he obviously, President Trump is going to have a very sympathetic Congress on this. And so I don't imagine that that will be an issue. I certainly, you know, we have long borders, and particularly we have a long northern border, which could use some more enforcement. And it's a complex border. I don't think anyone is actually, I think there's no disagreement that enhancing the Border Patrol is a good idea. I think that's probably a bipartisan consensus, or you know, I don't think there's probably much dispute about that. This is a very long and complex border. The Border Patrol does a tremendously good job, and to add people there would be a good thing. Hopefully, President Trump will also focus on what is really a very high risk situation at this point, which are the ports of entry. You know, more and more drug smugglers and people that we don't want in the country are actually coming through the ports of entry with fake documents and that kind of thing. And our port of entry inspectors from Customs and Border Protection are incredibly good at detecting those people. There just aren't enough of them. And so hopefully that will be, you know, something that Democrats and Republicans can agree on, and we can get more strength both at the southwestern border and also at the border with Canada. That I don't think there'll be much disagreement about.
Is there any better understanding of what he's proposing as far as the wall between the United States and Mexico? Again, on Sunday, he talked about, said, well, parts of it will be just fencing. I think those are his words. What about that? And has Mexico weighed in since he was elected?
Well, I think the wall is something he's definitely going to start some construction down at the southwest border. You know, Donald Trump is a real estate magnate. He's constructed, as he says, he's done a lot of construction. I'm sure he will do that. I imagine that he will quickly discover that the terrain at the border is extremely difficult and very costly to build a type of concrete wall and not really practical, and that he will, you know, come around to putting fences in some places. In some places, it's going to be technology. I think that's probably largely symbolic. The chances that Mexico will pay for that wall, I think, are non-existent. And so it depends on how much he wants to pick a fight with Mexico over that. I think one of the issues, though, is that the problem, or the challenge that we have at the border right now, does not involve people who are trying to come in without detection. We have a surge of very vulnerable families. Many of them are women and children who are coming from Central America. They're fleeing a particularly pervasive and type of criminal gang violence that has really taken hold in Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador. And those people are not trying to hide. They're coming to the border, and they are turning themselves in and asking for asylum in the United States. And so the wall doesn't address that problem. And hopefully, you know, President Trump will, once he's in office, will quickly understand that this is a different dynamic than he described on the campaign trail, and will take steps to address fixing our asylum system, which is in a shambles.
Well, Julia Preston, thanks for joining us today. It's a lot to talk about. Hopefully we can have you back again as things evolve.
Okay, very good. It's good to talk to you. Thank you.
Julia Preston, National Immigration Correspondent for The New York Times. More coming up on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about what to expect from a Donald Trump administration when it comes to immigration policy. His victory on Election Day sort of blew up the Republican map on this issue. Joining us by phone is National Media Director at the Federation for American Immigration Reform, Ira Melman. FAIR is a membership group that works on immigration policies that serve national interests. Ira Melman, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Also with us is counsel for the Ohio Hispanic Coalition, Joseph Mas. Welcome back, Joe.
Thank you. Good being with you again.
Joe, the main legal framework for immigration law was enacted back in the early 50s.
Right.
Would any of that have to change for Donald Trump to carry out even his tempered proposals
No.
when it comes to rounding up illegal immigrants or even legal immigrants with criminal records?
No, no. There's plenty on the books already that he would not have to go back to Congress and ask for any kind of an adjustment of the 52 Act, or for that matter, the 96 Act, because that was something that was passed back when Newt Gingrich was Speaker of the House that sort of tightened the noose a little bit more. All that he would have to do was just go forward on enforcement at the various communities and throughout the United States. And there is plenty in the books for him to do that.
So, Ira Melman, you're not necessarily, I mean, do you agree that this is discretionary and has been for a long time?
Well, it's not discretionary. The executive branch is required to carry out the laws that are passed by Congress. Now, obviously, you're not going to be able to do it entirely. You can't find everybody in the country who is here illegally. What he needs to be doing is to go after people, as he said on 60 Minutes the other night, who pose a serious threat to the safety of the American people. We should also deport people when we find them. But most importantly, what we have to rely on the fact is that illegal aliens make rational decisions. They have come in large numbers because we sent the message that we're not going to enforce our immigration laws. We're not going to prevent people from getting jobs in this country, even if you're here illegally. You're going to have local governments that provide all kinds of benefits and services. What we need to do is to reverse these expectations, make it clear that we're going to be policing the employers, the jobs aren't going to be available, and rely on the fact that people will make rational decisions. Fewer will come. Over time, a lot of people will decide to go home, and also accept the fact that there is no law made by man or God that has 100% compliance.
Mm-hmm.
This won't be the exception, and that, you know, there will always be some level of illegal immigration in the United States. But the choices aren't between just mass chaos, which is what we have now, or mass capitulation in the form of amnesty or mass roundups. There are logical things that we can do to have our laws enforced in the interest of the American people.
And when you talk about who pose a serious threat, what do you mean by that?
Well, people who commit crimes in this country, and in many places in this country, you have local governments that won't even turn over criminal aliens to the federal government for removal. And I believe under the Trump administration, he will come down on those jurisdictions, whether it is in the form of withholding certain federal funds, possibly even lawsuits by the Justice Department. We saw the Obama administration use that when Arizona and a number of other states wanted to enforce laws that the administration didn't want enforced. So he has a whole variety of tools at his disposal to try to get local governments to comply. And, you know, there needs to be some level of enforcement, even against non-criminal aliens, but it's got to be a combination of things. It's got to be a combination of enforcements and discouraging people from coming and remaining in the United States. That's the way we enforce most laws in this country. It's the model that we have to use for immigration as well.
Hmm. Joe Moss?
I tell you what, it's really interesting, and I've been on the show with Ira before, and what I can't really disagree with 99% of what he's saying, because he's trying to project the way that a Trump agenda might actually be carried out. A couple of days ago, Michael Moore addressed this and other issues relating
to the documentary filmmaker.
The documentary filmmaker regarding the policies of the Trump administration. And he said, particularly with respect to the immigration issue, that you're not going to see people being herded into cattle cars, as you did in Nazi Germany, that this will be fascism with a smiley face. And that's exactly what I think. And I think it's actually what IRA is describing. I think it's going to be a multi-layered approach, approaching the local communities, the cities and the states that have been less friendly towards a deportation agenda, and try to put pressure on them to cooperate with the federal authorities. This would be local jurisdictions cooperating with the federal authorities to identify and to place in the hands of Immigration and Customs Enforcement individuals who are undocumented.
Ira, you see it as a smiley face?
Well, I don't see it as a smiley face or as fascism. Look, we have to remember that the United States has immigration laws. Every nation on earth has immigration laws, not because we want to be mean to people, not because we don't understand their aspirations, but because we recognize that what might be in the individual interest of a person in another country to come here can have a detrimental effect on people in this country. It affects people's jobs. It affects their children's education. It affects the safety of their communities when you have local governments that arrest people for other offenses and then refuse to turn them over to the federal government to be removed from the United States. This has nothing to do with fascism. It simply has to do with protecting the legitimate interests of the United States, and every country on earth has immigration laws. These are not illegitimate. These make sense. We need to enforce them sensibly. We need to enforce them with compassion, but we do need to protect the interests of the American people.
Just going back to the serious threat thing, I just want to clearly understand. When I was talking to Julia Preston from the New York Times, she said it clued to get to those numbers of 3 million, 2 to 3 million that Donald Trump was talking about on 60 Minutes and previously, you'd have to include currently legal residents of the United States, legal immigrants who have any number of very minor offenses on their record, like driving without a driver's license, that kind of a thing, driving without insurance, misdemeanors, minor offenses. Do you agree?
Well, nobody knows the numbers. The federal government has not been very forthcoming, particularly under this administration. We don't know the precise number, whether it's 2 million, 3 million. I think that's less important than just the basic principle that we are not going to allow people who pose some kind of threat to the American people who, are either here illegally or who have come to the United States legally but then violated the terms of their presence here in the United States.
But even on minor issues like driver's license.
We're talking hypotheticals here. Let's see how this kind of plays out. Certainly I think most people would agree that we go after people who have committed crimes, who might be associated with terrorist organizations. Those are the sorts of things I think everybody can agree on. And, where to draw the line is something that we can sort of figure out as we go along.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. If you have a question or comment, you just heard from Ira Melman from of the Federation for American Immigration Reform. Also with me, Joseph Moss, counsel for the Ohio Hispanic Coalition. Questions, comments, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Joe Moss?
Yeah, and I was listening to what Ira said, and he suggested that perhaps we're speculating as to what the enforcement can look at. But I think we have some data to support what it might look like, because if you recall, during the first 4 years of the Obama administration, there was actually a fairly robust initiative to deport individuals that came to the attention of Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And this was during a time when Immigration and Customs Enforcement numbers exploded. We went from three agents, and this is all confidential. When I have presented these figures to the local director of the agency, he hasn't disputed them, but we went from approximately three agents to 47 agents in Franklin County, Ohio. This is what I suggest concerning the numbers. Mr. Trump came up with the 2 to 3 million from a report by the Department of Homeland Security from 2013 that suggested that there were 1.9 million removable criminal aliens. Now, what they were referring to were individuals, for example, that had overstayed their visas and so on. Other sources suggest that the number of individuals who are, number one, undocumented, and number two, or it could be maybe they've committed a crime with illegal status but can certainly be removed, is about 820,000. So the number is much smaller. And within that number, at least according to the conversations that I've had with local immigration and customs enforcement, about 55% of those are for the types of offenses that you, Ann, have suggested: driving without a license, driving under suspension, and things of that nature. So if you get to the people who might be dangerous or who have committed serious offenses, I will maintain that the figure is going to be much, much smaller.
Can I just point out that you don't have to have committed a subsequent crime in the United States in order to be removable?
Absolutely. Right. He's right.
If you're
in
the United States illegally, you are subject to deportation. Mm-hmm. And there needs to be at least that threat out there that there's a chance that you're going to get caught and removed if you come to the United States illegally. So as I said before, it has to be a combination of things. You need that threat of enforcement, but you also need policies in place that make it clear to people you're not going to benefit by breaking the law, and rely on the fact that people will make rational decisions over time. You know, we didn't get into this mess overnight. We're not going to get out of it overnight. But if we consistently make it clear to people that you're not going to benefit and that there's also the potential that ICE will find you and remove you, that changes people's behavior.
Hmm. Dale in Worthington, you're on the air. Hi, Dale.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I have 2 points. My concern is that the new administration will clearly take the low-hanging fruit, and by that I mean under DACA, the executive action that Barack Obama took.
Yeah, deferred action for childhood arrivals.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right, and these are people who came forward, who stepped into the light, who probably are basically good people, but I suspect that those are going to be the first people that are going to be, investigated because they have their names, they have their addresses, they know who they are. They don't have to look for them. They're there. And well, a second point that I consider very important, I would like to give my condolences to the family and all of the public broadcasting news agencies for the loss of a very, very bright woman, which is Gwen Ifill. You have my
indeed.
Thank you, Dale. Thank you for that. What about the deferred action for childhood arrivals, Ira Melman, are they safe or not? Or are they that low-hanging fruit that Dale referred to?
Well, I think what is likely to happen is that when he becomes president, Trump will repeal DACA, in which case I think it's about 800,000 or 900,000 people who've received that protection will lose the protection from removal, but that doesn't mean that they're necessarily going to be removed. They will also lose their work authorization. Essentially, what will happen is they will revert to the same position that they were in before DACA was established in 2012. But I don't see that they're going to target specifically these people. Trump said the other night that he intends to first go after people with criminal records. That I don't think anybody reasonably would object to that. We think that they also ought to have a policy that just has some level of deterrence because, you can't simply go after people who have committed serious offenses. You have to have some level of threat that just being in the country illegally and violating our immigration laws means something. But I don't think they're specifically going to target the people who have had DACA protection.
At first.
We'll see what happens after it first. What we need is a policy, as I said, that relies on the fact that people can be discouraged from breaking the law, whether they've had DACA or not had DACA.
Can I add something about the DACA thing? Because, I really have been feeling very, very guilty and contrite about it. When DACA was first announced, there were rather radical activists, I think, on the Hispanic side that were advising that the young people not apply for DACA.
Right.
Because by doing so, as you said, Anne, then they would be exposing themselves to the possibility that we wouldn't have a Democratic administration and that something would happen. And I encouraged countless young people to come forward into the light and take a chance. And I think even on Sister Station on Columbus on the Record, I looked at the camera and I said, act like an American to those young people. And I'm ashamed that I did that, and perhaps there's blood on my hands.
Another group of people trying to enter the United States that Julia Preston brought up in my conversation with her earlier, Ira Melman, the South Americans who are seeking asylum from gang violence in South American countries, they're openly trying to enter the United States. Thoughts about that?
Well, look, I mean, we cannot take everybody from Central America who lives in a country where there might be just sort of general violence, or any other part of the world for that matter. The asylum policy was intended to protect people who faced a well-founded fear of persecution based on a variety of criteria from at the hands of their governments. What you have now in Central America and many other parts of the world is just sort of generalized chaos. And there are tens of millions, maybe even hundreds of millions of people who face those sorts of situations. And the response can't be to bring everybody who is living in a difficult country where there is political upheaval or social upheaval and allow them to come to the United States. There are things that the United States can and should do to try to address situations in those countries. But what we saw was a response primarily to DACA. When the president announced a couple of years ago that if you came to the United States as a minor, we'd probably let you stay, you saw this surge. And conditions haven't changed all that much over the past 3 or 4 years in those countries. There was violence before, there is violence now. What changed was the perception that if you showed up at the border, turned yourself over to a Border Patrol agent, you would be processed through some center down there at the border, released out onto the streets of the United States, given a court hearing several years in advance that you never really had to show up for. So what changed was the perception of what would happen when you arrived here, not what is happening in those countries.
Well, I think Ira is partly correct. But once again, I disagree with a number of the details, including the fact that there has been a spike in violence and targeted violence to individuals in those countries. And sometimes the violence is targeted at families that have family in the United States, because some of the kids that are showing up at the border, in fact, have family in the United States. DACA, however, was very specific, and it did not leave a door open to anybody that would present themselves at the border. But how about now?
Yeah.
And you know, here's a radical idea. How about the United States taking a leadership role to find homes for these children throughout Latin America, throughout Latin America and North America? That is something that the European Union is doing with respect to the refugees from Africa and the Middle East. But I see nothing happening because the tenor of how to deal with immigration has changed radically. And that is something that I never expected from my United States, from my America.
We'll continue our conversation. You just heard from Joe Moss, counsel for the Ohio Hispanic Coalition. Also with us by phone, Ira Melman, National Media Director for the Federation for American Immigration Reform. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We are talking about immigration and President-elect Donald Trump. The issue of illegal immigrants has been a cornerstone of his campaign rhetoric, and he has promised to take action in one form or another on day one. Still with us by phone, National Media Director at the Federation for American Immigration Reform, Ira Melman. Also with me in the studio from the council is the counsel for the Ohio Hispanic Coalition, Joe Moss. Questions, comments, 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. President-elect Trump has promised to sanction countries that refuse to take back criminal immigrants. Are you in favor of that, Ira Melman? Is that a reasonable prospect?
Absolutely. These countries are responsible for their own citizens. These are people who are no longer welcome in the United States because of, you know, some offense that they've committed here or for some other reason. And it ought to be the expectation of the United States that these countries will take back their citizens. We take back our citizens who are deported by other countries. Virtually all countries on earth do that. You have a few renegade regimes that have decided they simply don't want their criminals back. And there's leverage that we can use. We can cut off the issuance of further visas to people in those countries. We can use foreign aid as leverage. There are a number of things that we have at hand to put pressure on these governments. We haven't been using them under the current administration, and hopefully under the new administration, they will get tough with these governments that simply dump their criminals on us and then refuse to take them back.
One of those countries includes China, right?
Yes, China has been a country that has refused to take back their criminals. You know, there are a lot of people in China who would like visas to come to the United States. We can make it clear that we're simply not going to start issuing lots of visas to people if we don't have some assurance from the Chinese government that if somebody runs into trouble here in the United States, that China will willingly take that individual back.
By the way, there's precedence to this. As a matter of fact, after the Cuban migration at Mariel, this is the 1980s.
The boat lift, right.
You remember that there were individuals that had, not only did they have a criminal record in Cuba, but also picked up a criminal offense here in the United States.
Right.
Cuba refused to take them back, and in some instances, the individuals refused to go back. And the United States didn't know what to do with them. And as a matter of fact, these individuals were incarcerated for a great number of years because of this impasse in the international relations. And of course, at that time, we didn't have diplomatic relations with Cuba either.
You know, Jomas, I want to go back to something you said earlier that you regret advising young people to come forward and participate in DACA and take advantage of that opportunity. What now? What now for them? What are you advising them to do now?
Well, clearly, they can't do anything. If the president-elect is going to go forward and rescind the executive order that allowed DACA on, you know, in January 20th or whatever, then they won't have the status. And the status for those individuals that now have it will be terminated.
Rhonda in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Rhonda.
Hi. My question is directed to Mr. Melman. Earlier in the program, you cited among the ways to discourage immigrants from coming to the United States illegally was to not make it attractive. And one of those ways is to keep them from getting jobs in the United States, so there's no way for them to support themselves. So I wonder if you've looked at the other side of that issue, because you'd have to, in order to do that, you would have to discourage employers from hiring these individuals. And these individuals are being hired to do jobs that Americans don't want. They're low-paying, unskilled jobs. So I wonder if you've thought about how that approach will most probably affect small business and business owners who don't have anyone to do the job.
Ira Melman?
Well, I think we've created self-fulfilling prophecies here. By allowing employers to hire low-wage illegal aliens, we have driven down wages and working conditions in those jobs to a point where American workers aren't interested in taking them, not because they don't want jobs, but because they refuse the poor wages and poor working conditions. You know, there are lots of things that employers would prefer not to do. You know, if they could get away with it, they would prefer not to pay the minimum wage or to abide by OSHA regulations. But the fact is, we have set certain conditions in this country for employers to be able to do business. Look, we have some 90 million people of a working age in this country who are out of the labor force, some of them voluntarily, some of them not voluntarily. There is a huge pool of untapped labor here in the United States. What these employers ought to be doing is reaching out to people in their communities who have the potential to work, you know, even providing a little bit of training to them and offering decent wages and working conditions. We don't have to have people coming in from other countries so that they can be exploited by employers who simply don't want to pay decent wages and provide decent working conditions.
And I wanted to move the discussion forward a little bit because I think it's easy, and we're finding a lot of things that maybe we happen to agree on. If we focus on those people who are likely to come in as new immigrants without inspection or otherwise. And I think that one thing that IRA has not addressed, and I haven't had a chance to address either, is what are we going to do with the 11 to 13 million people who are here already and who perhaps have been here for many, many years, are now part of hybrid families where you've got mom and dad. Maybe mm-hmm. dad is undocumented. Mom maybe has something in process. And all the children are American citizens.
Just by virtue of being born here.
By virtue of being born here. Mm-hmm. We had two episodes in this country that you really don't study in school, at least not until you get to college. One in 1931, the other one in 1956. The sadly named Operation Wetback, where family members were deported and the children were de facto deported as well.
Because they couldn't survive here without their parents.
They couldn't survive here without their parents. And sometimes you had the heart-wrenching scenario of social workers at bus stations and train stations trying to talk the children into staying in the United States in orphanages rather than go back to Mexico. This is what we're facing today. We faced it before. Is there a plan, or will there be a plan, or has Mr. Trump said anything that would suggest what can we do with the 11 to 13 million people? Because I haven't heard it.
Ira Melman?
Well, I think I did address that in saying that we need to discourage people from remaining in the United States. And if you are here illegally, you can't get a job, you can't get the benefits that you're looking for. When you decide to leave, as any responsible parent would, they would take their minor children with them. Look, we recognize the children of citizens born abroad as American citizens. Virtually every government on earth has that same policy. So these kids are citizens of whatever country their parents happen to come from. But we also have to remember who created this situation. Yes, you know, I think we all feel badly when you have family members who are affected, but we have to remember it was the conscious decision of the parents to violate laws that put their kids in this situation. In every other circumstance, when parents violate laws and there are unfortunate consequences to family members, we hold the people who broke the law accountable. Somehow, when it comes to immigration policy, we seem to think that people who violate our immigration laws should be exempt from that general principle, and that somehow it's the responsibility of the American people or the fault of the laws of the United States, when in fact it is the fault of the people who consciously put their kids in that position in the first place.
You know, I am a refugee from Cuba. We were facing a difficult situation in my country when my parents decided to leave, and we also left and arrived here under a status that was not a permanent status. I will not fault any parent on the face of the earth to do what he or she or they can in order to seek a better life for themselves and for their children. This is something that both the United Nations, as well as the Holy See, His Holiness Pope Francis and his predecessors have stated, it's a moral right to pursue. And if the laws of given countries are caught in a political quagmire, because we have tried to pass immigration reform countless times, and they have been blocked by Mr. Trump's party, then I would say that they are not criminals, that they are heroes.
Well, can I just comment on that? Look, you're looking at immigration policy solely from the perspective of the immigrants. And if you look at it from the perspective of the immigrants, it is always good. Nobody comes to the United States unless it is in their interest to be here. The question is, what impact does it have on everybody else? What impact does it have on somebody trying to find a job? What impact does it have on children who are in schools where half the kids in the class don't speak English and nobody's learning anything? That really is the purpose of immigration laws here in the United States and around the world. As I said, it's not because we want to be mean. It's not because we don't understand the aspirations of people who want to migrate. It is because we recognize the limitations that any country has in being able to absorb people into their society and still protect the vital interests of their citizens.
Whoever I just disconnected, please call back. Let's turn to another issue. Donald Trump has vowed to create a tougher vetting process for immigrants, one aimed at making sure whoever is let in loves us. That's his term. The work of an overhaul aside, should that be a goal of an immigration process? Ira Melman?
Yes, I mean, we certainly ought to make sure that the people who are coming to the United States don't intend to do us harm. Look, I mean, we are facing, especially from places in the Middle East, you have organizations, terrorist organizations like ISIS, who have told us that they intend to infiltrate operatives along with the flow of people who are coming in as refugees. Our own top national security people have told us we simply don't have the capacity to adequately vet people, so that when we do allow people in, we should be reasonably sure that the people who are coming in don't pose a threat, don't have criminal records, don't have associations with organizations that might pose a danger to the American people. You know, protecting the security of the country is really one of the primary obligations of the president.
I think, you know, I think the rhetoric here is very, very important, because when Mr. Trump talked about the system not being hard enough, he didn't have the slightest idea of what the system was. In fact, these individuals are, for the most part, vetted for during a period of between 12 and 18 months. The one thing the authority that said that we don't have the capacity, I think that he was speaking, he or she was speaking rhetorically, for the simple reason that what is actually meant is that there is no way in the world that you can determine what is in the heart of an individual attempting to infiltrate the country as a refugee. And there is also no way, in other words, we don't have the capacity to identify what individual might be radicalized, perhaps radicalized by what is going on inside of this country. So heaven help us all. I don't think that there is a way to do what Mr. Trump is trying to do, and certainly not by targeting people of the Islamic faith.
I have an email from Sandra. She writes, could your guests speak about work visas, which business leaders like Bill Gates have been pushing for? People will always go where they can improve their lives, and this immigration problem is not unique to the United States. Why can't the U.S. open more work visas, not only for STEM jobs, but farming and childcare, et cetera? Mm-hmm. Ira Melman, your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, we actually do have an unlimited number of farm work visas for people who are coming into the United States. But in terms of the H-1Bs, which are for more skilled workers, mm-hmm. We have seen the same thing happen in that industry that we have seen in a lot of other industries. These companies want access to cheaper labor. They are actually bringing in H-1B workers to replace American workers who are on these jobs. It is simply more convenient and more advantageous for a lot of companies to use foreign guest workers rather than employ Americans. And again, we're giving more leverage to these companies than they deserve. And in the process, we are undermining a lot of people in this country who have worked very hard to train for these jobs and are simply left out in the cold because you have companies that say, you know, I just want to be able to hire whoever I want at the price that I determine. We have to restore some balance here, and we have more than enough STEM skill in the United States. What we need are companies willing to hire people who are in the United States, American citizens, in preference to guest workers.
And I have an email from Angel. What are the plans for the next administration to punish people who employ undocumented immigrants? Ira Melman, we're just about out of time, but I wanted to squeeze that in.
Well, I don't know what their plans
are.
Well,
what do you hope?
If I was making the policy, yeah, we would fine the employers a significant amount of money, make them pay for it. At some point, if they continue to do it, we should pull business licenses, possibly impose criminal penalties. We have the capacity. The E-Verify system is out there. It works. It needs to be mandatory. And then we need to hold them accountable, just like the IRS holds tax sheets accountable. It's the way we enforce all civil laws in this country.
And in fact, those laws are already on the books.
Right.
I don't think Mr. Trump would have to ask Congress to pass anything new in order to pursue that. And it's anticipated by the community, by the way, that that's how this enforcement is actually going to start.
Okay, Joe Moss from the Council for the Ohio Hispanic Coalition. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate your time, Joe.
Thank you, Ann, as always.
And Ira Melman, National Media Director for the Federation for American Immigration Reform. Thanks again, Ira, for joining us. Appreciate your time.
Thanks. My pleasure.
And thanks to all the All Sides listeners. Thanks for your calls. Thanks for your emails. And thanks for your attention. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.